Hello and welcome to edition 280 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK, and we're here to bring you our review of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, along with the latest talking points from Formula One. I am Richard Baxter. With me tonight, we have the two times Beccles Kart champion, Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening, Rich. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, all good. Thanks. And you?
Yes, all good. Yep, all good.
Good, good. Cracking stuff. And also joining us tonight is our own F1 fan from south of the border, the ever bullish Katie Sandals.
Evening, chaps.
Evening. You're right.
Yeah, every time I hear Carl's intro, I think I can never live up to that glory.
Unfortunately, it's a long time ago now.
It doesn't matter. The facts stand.
And I'm pretty sure, I'm confident in saying this, you are on Wikipedia, aren't you, Kyle, as well?
I was, wasn't I?
So
I don't know if that's still true.
It's the proof you need.
But are you cited on Alex Albon's Wikipedia page like I am? That was our excitement last time, Rich, wasn't it?
So what we have here are the Wikipedia gods of the NRF1 podcast.
Yes, I like this. We shall claim this title forevermore.
I'm tempted to go on and change yours though, Kyle, because you once said, I feel like it was at a Christmas pod we did in the video, and you just said Beccles champion. So I'm tempted to make you your own Wikipedia page and just call you the Beccles champion.
Yeah, I'm still there. Woo!
2009,
blimey.
That's so good. Cool. 2009, same year as Jenson Button, eh?
Yes. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Me and Jenson.
Classic year.
All right. We better crack on with the rest of the pod, because there's quite a bit to get through. We also need to say, obviously, we missed the Monaco Grand Prix. Apologies for that. But I'm sure you didn't mind too much, because, let's be honest, there wasn't that many key talking points from the weekend. Mainly the race was pretty boring, but also the one big standout point, Verstappen won the race, which was great for him, and he took the lead in the Drivers' Championship, which I think is a phrase which has been said about 500 times over the last 2 weeks. It seems to be the big talking point. I think people are just surprised Hamilton isn't leading the Drivers' Championship and it's Verstappen instead. But yeah, guys, any takeaways you got to bring up from Monaco?
It all seemed to be going Leclerc's way. Like, you know, he'd pulled off the unthinkable, you know, securing pole and then crashing so no one else could secure pole. It seemed like, some people said it seemed like the perfect plan, except it wasn't. I don't know. I was gutted for Leclerc. I think that he didn't get that chance to be to actually sort of make it properly to start on pole from his home Grand Prix. I guess that changes your mentality a bit as well for drivers like Max. So, you know, credit to him for like going, okay, this is my race now to lose, not mine to gain, and he just went for it. And, you know, class from start to finish, to be honest.
Yeah. As it was, it would have been a more interesting race, I think, had the Ferrari been there. But, you know, one of those things.
That's sort of the most interesting bit, wasn't it? The bit before the race. But, yeah, the fact there's no yellow flags, which just, I don't know how that's possible in Monaco. And no safety cars. And I can't remember seeing anybody try and overtake somebody out of the tunnel bit either, which is normally a, you know, given in the Monaco race, but
yeah,
not the best one for Monaco.
No, well, it all turned around at the other street circuit in Baku, and now what a manic weekend this was. So it all started on the Saturday with qualifying. So many red flags. Turn 15. What was going on?
What's turn 15?
It was the corner where everyone kept crashing.
Was that? Oh, okay.
I think it was 15. I might be wrong.
Sounds about right. But it was a six people crashed. Is that right in qualifying?
I think there were four red flags, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But then Tsunoda and Sainz crashed right at the end of the session, so I think the red flag was for Tsunoda, and then Sainz decided to join him in a graceful ballet that is crashing.
It's like a way to celebrate it, wasn't he? Sort of like, look what I can do, Yuki.
But, yeah, suddenly the circuit turned to ice, and Sainz was no more. I can't remember that many red flags in a race in a qualifying even in ages. It was just stop start, and I do wonder what sort of impact that has on you when you are trying to get into that qualifying zone. I guess you've got to be so focused, sort of pitch perfect with your driving at that point, and you know, to be thrown off and started so often. I don't know. It clearly made for an interesting qualifying result. But yeah, I do wonder how it changes your mentality, your thoughts, your tactics, you know, going into that. Because I know there was a lot of questioning over how it all kind of ended up at the end with them sort of all trying to go out on that final fast lap and not having anything banked, which kind of led to the grid as it was.
Yeah, it's worth saying as well at this point, Charles Leclerc took his second pole position in two races, back-to-back poles for Leclerc and Ferrari. Now, that is quite a feat considering where Ferrari were last year. And, you know, it's not to be horrible to them, but they don't have the quickest car, the fastest car on the grid this year.
No, this Charles definitely seems to be able to turn it on a Saturday afternoon. He was a little bit helped with the toe, wasn't he, with Mercedes sort of doing their two-lap run, weren't they? But Carlos Sainz was fifth. Was it 3/10 behind Charles? So, they seem to, certainly afternoon-wise, there's definitely some pace there. And even Sundays has not been too bad. But, I'm kind of intrigued with Leclerc at the moment because he's obviously very, very quick. There's no doubt about that. But I wonder if he's... I don't know, questions for you two. Is he making too many mistakes? And regularly making too many, you know?
I don't know. I don't know if it's him or if it's possibly something with the Ferrari. Because Carlos Sainz, as we saw in the race, also he's made mistakes. Especially in Baku, he was in a good position and he just kind of went straight on, had to reverse out the slip road. It seems to be something with Ferrari in general.
I suppose you could be pushed.
Sorry, go on, Katie.
I think they're still in recovery mode almost from last season. Obviously, was one of their worst. And I think they mentioned at the time that, you know, they'd almost kind of written off this season as we'll try and get back to where we need to be, but it's not going to be easy. Don't expect us to see us at the top of the podium. And I think that's kind of almost playing out. You've got the new guy in Sainz that's still settling down, but he is getting, you know, points under his belt. But maybe it is a combination of trying to get back to where they have been in the past, and that taking perhaps, you know, as long as they expected, but longer than anyone kind of hoped. Kind of a bit of user error, as it were, as well.
Yeah. That's so true. But it's nice to see Ferrari back up there, at least, and have a bit more fight about them.
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah. We want Ferrari at the front. Especially the two quick drivers, so...
Yeah.
You want a quick car for them.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we kind of touched on the race a little bit, but we have to say that it was a bit of a slow burn of the race. It started off and it was quite exciting kind of early on. We had three different leaders because obviously Leclerc led, then Hamilton, and then Verstappen took the lead. Hamilton obviously pit stop woes, dropped back a bit, and ended up behind Perez. It kind of seemed to be, you know, kind of early on it was like, yeah, this is going to be a decent race. Then it kind of just almost for the 30, 40 laps or so, it just went kind of quiet, went pretty silent, and not too much happened until nearer the end.
Yeah, I suppose, after the first pit stop, you had that period up to the stroll bit. Like I said, it was quiet. I suppose it was only really Hamilton putting pressure on Perez a bit, wasn't it?
Mm.
I suppose he was dropping off a bit towards the end of that sort of quiet period. I just like watching the cars around Baku. I just think it's just all a bit mad, isn't it? You got the sort of Monaco-esque sort of pushing the walls, and then you got the lightning quick bit as they come onto the 2 kilometer straight or whatever. And sort of the fast corners there. I just like watching cars go around there.
Is it kind of a sign, though, you know, with that kind of, you know, in quotes, kind of boring element almost to it, that Max is really on it this season and he's in it to win it? You know, I think that there are still some people who dismiss him even at this point, saying, you know, well, he's only just ahead of Hamilton. Hamilton will swing it back and he'll, you know, he'll go for him and that'll be it. Max just can't compete. But he is showing that kind of, he's putting in the time and he's showing that kind of that sort of dominance over the field that Hamilton's shown previously. And he's showing, you know, that he's so focused this year, perhaps more than we've ever seen him before. This isn't the, you know, the hormone-fueled teenage Max going, you know, making mistakes and driving slightly dangerously. This is a very focused man who knows what he wants and he's got his eyes on the prize. And is that boring? For anybody who isn't a Red Bull fan, I'd probably say it is. But that kind of, that interest, you know, that dominance, it just interests me that, you know, it does seem boring, but only because it's somebody else dominating the field when we like to see it all get a bit, we've been used to so much chaos in the past few races, so, yeah.
Well, I think it's still exciting, and I think it's great to see another team, another driver out there fighting. And it kind of, in some ways, this so far is reminding me a little bit of kind of 2005, where you've had, you know, you had Michael Schumacher, who you could compare to Lewis Hamilton, multiple world champion in a race-winning team, race-winning car, and he has all the skills that he has. And yet along comes this young, new guy who kind of has come out of nowhere as such, a bit like Fernando Alonso did. You've got Verstappen coming through. You know, obviously he's shown glimpses in previous seasons, but he's really stepped up now with his team, with his driving style, and he's there to fight, like you say, and he's not going to go anywhere. This is going to be all season long, and I wouldn't be surprised if Abu Dhabi is going to be the decider this year.
Yeah, like you say, I think it'll go right to the end. That's probably the consistency Verstappen shown this year compared to Hamilton, who has been Mr. Consistent over the last few years. He hasn't really done anything wrong, and Hamilton's had a few little glitches, like the Imola running off in the wet, and obviously the glitch at the weekend. But he's been incredibly. He's quick. You know, he's been quick since he came into F1. But it's his consistency at the moment, which is pretty impressive. But like I say, and as we said earlier, but the points difference, him getting ahead, was at 4 points now.
Yes,
there's such. People getting quite excited by that, and always could be a big swing. It's like so many races to go, isn't there?
Yeah.
But, I think it's far too early, really, to look at little point swings like this. But yeah, just can't wait for the next few races to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have to say the race, it really came alive, kind of previously, like you mentioned, because of two tyre blowouts. First one for Lance Stroll. Which was very quick. The second one for Verstappen, whilst he was leading the bloody race, it was going even faster at that point on the track. Now, Pirelli have said it looks like it's debris that caused it. I think everyone said, basically all the teams, all the drivers said, this is ridiculous. We know what the answer is going to be. We've been here before. They're going to blame it on debris on track. I haven't heard anything else about the tyres since then, but I feel like that's going to be a really big kind of talking point for the rest of the season moving forwards. Because, of course, we saw it last year in Silverstone. The tyres kind of failed, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they said that it's going to take a little bit of time for them to be able to sort of fly them back, have a look at them and get that deep sort of result on what was going on. But yeah, we, you know, changes were made after last season, and it, you know, when it all went spectacularly wrong. And I think it's so dangerous. Maxwell's going like 200 miles an hour or something when he crashed, and you know, for something that's completely, you know, it's not driver error, and for something to happen at that kind of speed in any situation as well, but in an F1 race could prove catastrophic if there'd been somebody closer behind him. So I don't know. I think Pirelli need to find answers, and they need to find them quickly, because it's really difficult, because those tyres were the same age and exhibiting the same signs. And you know, they admitted later as well that there was a big gash in Lewis Hamilton's what was it? His rear left tyre had another big gash in it as well, which they also attributed to the debris. But what kind of debris on track caused that much sort of damage? Mm. I'm not quite sure exactly, and if that's an issue with the track, then that's something for, you know, the organisers to, you know, that they need feedback on to fix, you know, immediately. But I don't know, it does seem like debris is such an easy answer to roll out.
And you remember a couple of years back, Bottas, he was in the lead of the race, and you could see, we saw it on TV, he ran over a bit of bodywork on the track, and he went you know, fast down the straight, got to the other end where he was braking for turn one, pretty much there, and the tyre was going. He obviously not necessarily controlled it, because he still went off and he kind of spun, but it just looked very different the way that the tyre went. So it's kind of thinking back to that and looking how it went for these guys and how it's so sudden, it just seems like the tyre was at the end of its life and just gave up on, you know, under everything it was going through, all the pressures that they go through, the tyre just was like, nope, not having it, failed, and just went. Because those, the way that, you know, we saw Stroll driving in a straight line, then suddenly steering wheel, you know, weaving left and right because the tyre's gone. Same with Verstappen, driving straight line, 200 miles an hour, suddenly the steering wheel starts to move and it, boom, he's gone, he's into the wall. It seemed very strange.
It's I still kind of find this quite difficult, because Pirelli, yeah, there shouldn't be tyre failures. There shouldn't be. But I suppose other stuff breaks on Formula One cars, doesn't it? You know, a wing can break or an engine can break and that sort of issue. So will we ever get to the point where tyres won't have blowouts like that? Or is that just the way racing and stuff was going to happen? And I suppose they were tyres at, what, 40 laps old? Getting 30, 40 laps old?
Yeah.
I suppose they got less...
34.
Yeah, got less rubber on it, so I suppose they are a bit more open to getting cuts. It's a bit difficult for me, because I felt like, yeah, there shouldn't be, but then is there kind of always going to be this occasional blowout? But I feel, sometimes I feel a bit sorry for Pirelli, but...
Put it this way, Kyle. If they did what you said and they changed the rules and they were forced to use all compounds of tyres, we wouldn't be in this mess in the first place.
Exactly.
So,
it's a very good point, Rich. It's a very good point.
We've had the answer for about 5 years, right?
Probably longer than that, isn't it?
Oh, but, something. It's been a while.
Yeah.
The simple rule. Wikipedia has decreed.
Simple rule, just get it in.
Absolutely. There you go. Well, you heard it here first, everyone. That's what we want. That's what I'm sure is going to happen in the next year. I'm going to say it now. Prediction right there. no, but we need to obviously continue, because due to Verstappen's crash, the teams asked about it and basically said a red flag. They red flagged the race after a quick safety car period. We would just have to take a minute to laugh at Williams, who said to Nicholas Latifi, stay out, stay out, stay out. So instead of following everyone through the pit lane, he stayed on track. And then they were like, no, come through the pit lane, but don't pit. And then it was like, stay out means stay out. complete breakdown there. But
what was his penalty in the end?
I think it was basically 10 seconds, which meant he just had to give the two places that he gained back. So it was weird.
Yeah, so in the hands moment for his engineer there, isn't it?
Like, yeah, definitely. And of course, because of the red flag, it meant we had a standing start, which I think everyone has agreed was necessary and was the perfect way to restart the race. And I mean, we talk about Lewis Hamilton having a lot of skill, and how he's such a good driver and everything. And he showed us a new skill as well in Azerbaijan, because little did we know he is a magician. He did his own "now you see it, now you see me, now you don't" act. He flicked a magic switch to help warm up his brakes and tires for the parade lap or out lap, and then as he went for an upshift at the start of the race, he accidentally hit it back on and it changes all the brake bias. So yeah, as soon as he hit the brakes into the first corner where he had the inside line and was alongside Perez and was potentially going to take the lead of the race, he hit the brakes and went in a straight line. It just completely left to the back of the field. Now, that's a true vanishing act he pulled off right there.
I thought you were going to say there, Rich, that his magic work there was producing a scream from Mark Webber, who was commentating at the time, which has since gone viral around the internet as this week's F1 meme. Just crazy. Like, you know, even seasoned professionals like Lewis Hamilton making mistakes on this track. And what a shame, because he just fired himself out into eternity. He ended up behind the likes of Mazepin and Schumacher, who, you know, must have been shocked and you know, slightly rubbing their hands with glee to see a multiple world champion behind them and not lapping them for once.
Now, just because you mentioned Mark Webber's scream, I have the restart. This is is it Channel 4's coverage?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So we don't own this. I'm going to play this. I repeat again, we do not own this, but this is just to hear Mark Webber scream.
Sound, and Perez immediately jumps across. Lewis Hamilton's going to get the lead. Lewis Hamilton takes it away, but he lands on it, and he's lost.
I hope that came across okay, but there's that.
Is that the reaction he'd have been making if he'd been in the car and did what Lewis did? I just wonder what where that came from. Like, is that what happens under the helmets of F1 drivers when they make mistakes like that? I don't know. Can you hear his thoughts on that one?
I think it's brilliant, because what this shows is someone who is watching Formula 1 and they're being reactive to what they're watching. They're reacting from their heart. It's passion right there that caused that scream. It's like, if you remember Gary Neville, when it was the Champions League, was it semi-final or was it the final, Chelsea against Barcelona?
Oh, the Torres goal, yeah.
Yeah. Gary Neville he had a weird scream then. And it's just true passion, I think, from an individual for the sport that they love. And I think that's great to see in commentary.
Especially with Mark Webber, because he always seems quite a chilled kind of guy, doesn't he? This sort of quite relaxed about everything, but obviously that got him going.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we've done some a few times in the past, a few kind of pods when we were at races or watching races or stuff, something like that. And I'm pretty sure that all of us have reacted in similar ways to the start of races. You just scream out.
Not that high pitched, but.
I could manage that. I don't think my walls are loud enough at all, like got enough in between them to stop my neighbours hearing me from like screaming and shouting at every sports player known to man on the regular. But yeah, it's a fun meme. It's passion. It's a man who, you know, retired from the sport but still loving it and loving seeing what he's seeing and loving the chaos that is F1 on the regular.
Absolutely. And I think finally, just to wrap up the Azerbaijan review, we need to talk about a few things. Vettel, he had a blinding race. He drove brilliantly. Perez, he had a great race. Of course, he actually won the race, we should say. He drove brilliantly throughout. And Gasly as well. He also had a very good race and took the final podium position. Couple of questions on the other guys. Vettel, is he back?
Oof.
It's a man that's more comfortable with the car, perhaps, this weekend. He had everything to gain from a disastrous weekend for his teammate, Lance Stroll. I think he was really pushing. He was really comfortable. I think we've seen that with a few of the guys that moved teams this weekend, with him and with Perez, that they seem to be kind of clicking into their cars, into their kind of new setups a bit more. It's taken some time. I mean, it's not worked for everybody, just ask like the likes of Ricardo this weekend, but it's nice to see him with a smile on his face and just kind of enjoying racing again, because it got sad kind of watching him at Ferrari. He almost felt kind of washed up and on his last legs almost, but it's especially this weekend, it's given him like a new vigor, new vim. And we were saying last year, would that be it? Would he lead the sport altogether? And it's great for that new sort of Aston Martin setup to get its kind of first podium behind it as well.
Yeah,
and that just sort out Stroll.
Yeah, that's very true. And Sergio Perez as well, obviously, he won the race, he had a good race. He's had a bit of a mixed season as it's gone on, but I think he's finally kind of, with this race, he really showed why Red Bull actually signed him in the first place. Because he was up there. He didn't qualify, I don't think, that great, did he?
Seventh, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah, seventh. Yeah, qualified seventh. And before before you knew it, he was up to third place. And then, of course, through the pit stop phase, he was second. He beat Brooke Hamilton.
Yeah, the cracking first lap, didn't he?
Yeah.
But yeah, he was doing the perfect, I suppose, in a simple summary, he was the perfect number two driver. He was there. Number one driver had an incident at the race, and he was there to pick up the win. But yeah, his pace during the race was he 3 or 4 seconds behind Verstappen sort of most of the race?
Yeah.
Holding off Lewis Hamilton, who was within 1.5 seconds of him for most of that time, which is never an easy thing to do, to hold off Hamilton. So, I was really impressed with Perez.
Yeah.
Obviously, a bit of a lucky win, but in a way, he deserved it just for his pace. And he was quick sort of all through the weekend, wasn't it? Just sort of Q3 he got wrong, which was a bit of a mess because of the red flag sort of stopping everybody's second runs. But, it was a really good weekend for him.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome, fantastic stuff. Well, if anyone else has any thoughts you think we missed from Baku or anything you want to let us know, then do get in touch and tell us. There's many ways. The best place to start is Patreon, patreon.com/nrf1, where you will find the full edition of this podcast, including our Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. They're on the way next. Also, social media, all very simple: Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The handle for all three is @thenrf1. You can email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Okay, so as we move towards the end of the podcast, we've got a few more quick pieces of news we need to cover. So first of all, we need to mention the McLaren stakeholder, Mansour Ogier. He sadly died before the race in Baku. There were some nice tributes to him all weekend, which is really nice to see. And of course, the whole NRF1 podcast sends our thoughts and wishes to all of those at McLaren and in the Ogier family. I thought some best wishes are with you. We also need to talk about some other news which was announced after the weekend. Williams, their team principal, Simon Roberts, he's going to leave. And they are going to have a new guy stand in. I've forgotten his name. And I know I should have written it down.
Capito.
Capito, that's the guy, Jost.
I
expect it's pronounced Jost, but it's got a J on
Sounds
it.
Sounds good, yeah.
So...
Because, Simon Roberts was there Obviously, when the whole... I've forgotten what they're called now. The owners of the...
Was it Williams.
Dorrelton yes. Capital.
Yeah. Who sort of appointed him, and you kind of felt like Simon Roberts was just kind of there to see how things go, and then this Joss Capito would then eventually take over, because he obviously got a big, long history in motorsport. So, it's a bit hard to judge Simon Roberts and what he's done, because you sort of saw a few interviews with him when the takeover took place, but you haven't really heard much about him since. So, it wasn't really a surprise to me. But hopefully
he
can
sign up in... I'm sorry, Carl.
No, I was just saying, hopefully this Mr. Capito can take Williams forward.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was kind of like a sign of intent that Williams are so bound on getting forward, which is great, obviously, from a Norfolk perspective for Russell. I think they need consistency in a period of stability now to really get going, to regroup, to... you know, try and make some serious changes for next season to get them out of this kind of rut they've been in for the past few seasons. Just bringing, experience will only be a good thing for Williams. So, best of luck to him. And hopefully we can see Williams, having that sort of resurgence, akin to what we've seen for the likes of McLaren in the past few years.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be good to see Williams have a good resurgence. And hopefully, like you say, hopefully it's a good sign for the future. We'll see. Hopefully it will. I suppose we should... I think that wraps up. I don't think there was any other news, was there, that I've missed?
No. Can't think of anything.
No, that'll do anyway. Awesome. So we'll move on to... France, which is the next race. Now, the red, white and blue, we were having a discussion there earlier, Katie, and I think there's a lot of people who have said the same thing, but they just get a headache from the track because the stripes they have and the runoff areas. Now, I mean, quite horrendous to look at, right?
Yeah, I get migraines enough as it is. I don't need anything else causing that. Thank you very much. It's striking, it's different. I mean, you want to stand out as a race course, I'm sure, but organisers of a race like that, but I don't know, no one likes it. I don't know, I can't stand it. I just think it just looks nasty.
Yeah.
That's my 2 cents on the matter. Sorry, poor Ricard.
Yeah, it just doesn't excite you, does it? As I mentioned earlier, sort of Baku, it's good to watch F1 cars around there, but poor Ricard hasn't quite got that feeling in it. It was a test track for so many years, and it's probably a reason why it was a test track, but I just kind of hope, because it's got the sprinklers there, isn't it? I hope there's some sort of somebody hacks into it. Not that I promote people hacking into other people's devices and various things, but it would be quite funny if
someone accidentally leans on the switch.
Oh no, what was that? Sorry. And then, oh no, I can't turn it off. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just going to hack into Carl's Wikipedia.
But yeah, maybe something like that to halfway through the race to.
Well, this is the thing, because recent races they haven't been great.
No.
But now we've got a season where the field is so closely matched. Could it finally deliver? Do you think there's any chance we could have a good race?
I mean, I'm always cautious because if you remember the Valencia street track, I mean, on this podcast we slaughtered that for a good few years, and then the last race was brilliant, wasn't it? And we were like, oh, maybe it's too early to leave, so you never know. But I'm not confident, but you never know.
Well, if there's no better time than the present, right? So come on Paul Ricard, deliver it. And we have to go through, what are your expectations and who would you put as favourites for this track? Because really, I think right now Formula 1, with Red Bull and Mercedes being so closely matched, it's almost which track suits which car better. So what are your expectations and who do you think it will favour the most?
I still think it'll be pretty even. Obviously looks like Red Bull had the advantage around street circuits, but will it go And obviously we think Mercedes in race trim seem to have the advantage around more traditional circuits, so you kind of think, oh, will it go back to Mercedes? But then you've also heard that Mercedes may not be too good with the heat, and if, you know, wherever in Europe looks pretty good at the moment, so yeah, I think it's gonna be pretty even between them.
Yeah, I think that balance of kind of current form with Verstappen really on it, going great guns and showing real consistency this season compared to, you know, lots of straights. Mercedes like straights and yeah, I don't know. If Mercedes can pull themselves back together and figure out what the heck is going on at the moment, then yeah, I think it's one for them to lose, perhaps, you know, or definitely Hamilton. Whether Bottas can, you know, stop feeling so defeated, bless him, and come out with a decent podium on this one is to be seen, I think. I think it's an opportunity for Hamilton to push himself forward again, but Max will be behind him at every step and every turn.
And it's quite funny, actually, because I've just looked at the weather and it says Paul Ricard, kind of the highest temperature we're seeing over the next 7 days is 29 degrees. There's a little bit of rain around on a couple of days. Next Thursday, it says there's a thunderstorm, but it's still 24 degrees. So, the weather's going to be pretty good. You expect it to be quite warm. And here's the thing you say about like Mercedes not working in the heat, Kyle. It's funny because over the last few seasons, people have said like Mercedes about their car, oh, it runs like a train. And what they mean is it's on rails through the corners. There's no drama, it's just set, it looks good, and it just doesn't stop, it doesn't break down. What they remind me this year is a bit more of a modern British train, where if it's too hot, no, we can't run. If it's too cold, no, we can't run. I don't do corners, I don't do straights. Oh, there's leaves, can't do that.
Will Bottas be getting on the rail replacement bus service out of there? That's the question. Here all season.
that's more like it. Maybe they should just get a bus instead.
At least they'd be able to park it and get some decent results.
Could you imagine that, having a bus and qualifying on pole position at Monaco? There'd be no one getting past you then, would there?
If you allow that, then you surely need to tap into the skills that some of the other drivers we definitely know have from their virtual racing days. Weren't they racing lawnmowers at one point? At least Charles Leclerc was, possibly George Russell. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to start letting buses onto the track, then you're gonna be in for a whole host of different vehicles on there very soon.
I like it. It's a good idea. It sounds like something straight from the old school Top Gear episodes. But, you know, never know. Awesome. Well, I think with that, that is everything wrapped up and done. So I think we may as well say we will return with E281. Jeez, we're really rattling through these podcasts. But yeah, that will be our French Grand Prix review. In the meantime, thank you, Kyle and Katie, for joining me. It's been a good one.
Yeah, cheers, Rich.
Thanks, Rich.
No, guys, thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. And you never know, by then, the Euros will be underway. We could be celebrating even more because England might be in the, I don't know, last 16 or quarterfinals or whatever. We'll see. But until then, have a great one. And goodbye for now.